This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Is Wednesday. I'm all messed up because there's football today. I had to think about what day it is. Hey, Seth.
Football Wednesday,
it's
Sean. That's
game
what it
day.
Is.
Do you get your get your game face on? It's NFL game day. Wake up, America. It's game day. Wednesday, 2:40 p.m. kickoff. Nothing says America quite like Wednesday afternoon football during a pandemic. Ravens, Steelers. I would imagine a game that you would have heard here on Sports Radio 610 had it stayed on Thanksgiving night. However, we will. I believe we will not be broadcasting it today. We have an afternoon show to do later on today. Seth, you and I have a morning show to do today.
Yeah.
Good morning.
This will be like any other football Sunday, which is I'll skip church yet again because yes, it's Wednesday, and then I'll go watch football afterwards.
Right.
You're at the Church of Sean and Seth right now.
That's right. That's right.
Glory, hallelujah, praise.
Yeah. All rise.
Bill O'Brien,
no, wait,
all that,
not all yeah. rise. That's in court. Kneel. Get on your knees and pray.
Get on your knees and pray to me.
I know it's very direct.
I told you before the show started, I'm in a little bit of a dilemma because a friend of mine, his son is a college tight end at a Division I school, and he's mm-hmm. trying to figure out whether to come out or not.
What are you telling
and
him?
It's hard for me to give the right advice because part of me, you know, wants to just all of a sudden get myself certified as an agent and capitalize on this kid.
Of course.
But then, of course, part of me wants to say, hey, and I'm joking about that. He's, I don't know. My first instinct is always that, hey, if you're not like a first or second round pick, stay in school, go back, develop, work on your blocking skills, all of that. But at the same time, the money has gotten astoundingly good for guys that are even mid and late round
yes.
picks. I mean, it's gotten really, really good. And if a guy's got his education in order to where he's going to get his degree, and maybe he'll be a fifth round pick or something, why risk injury? The math is different than it was like 10 or 20 years ago. So I'm sitting here. I've been working on a text to send back to my friend for about a half hour, and I'll probably finish it after the show.
Spoiler alert, what is the ultimate advice going to be here? Are you going to tell him to come out, or are you going to tell him to stay in school?
Well, it depends. I don't know what feedback they've gotten. And the
gotcha.
Problem is when agents are telling you, you know, the downside for an agent is always a lot less than the downside for the kid who's leaving college.
Yeah.
You know, if my friend comes out and – if my friend's kid comes out for the draft and doesn't get drafted at all and he's just struggling to make a roster somewhere, no, agent doesn't lose anything.
That's right.
Where if if he waits a year and everything, it might be better for him. I don't know. I got to find out who they're getting advice from how good he is. And then I got to go in. You know what I got to do, Sean? I got to loop Owen Daniels into this and have him watch some film.
Kid's a tight end, it sounds like, huh?
He's a tight end, yeah. And he's like physically. This kid's father should have been in the NFL like as a defensive end or something.
Hmm.
But this kid's father was just too – he was too adept at the finer social aspects of life when he was in high school. He was going out – so this kid is one of my friends in high school. He was like – he was really good looking. Like he was 6'4", like 235, with pitcher on the baseball team and everything. But it was like the kid that was – he was fully grown when he was like 16 years old.
Oh,
but he was living like he was 25 years old.
Oh.
He'd go out, you know, like after baseball practice, he'd go out, grab a six-pack from the back seat of his car, crack a couple open,
oh,
then
man.
Drive home. Was going out with this 22-year-old girl who was like, Sean, she was smoking hot. Like, this is like, it's, to a high school kid especially, my friend, like, all of us were just these little, you know, squeaky voice nerds. And my friend's, like, pulling up in his, I think he drove, like, an old Malibu or something, but with his 22-year-old hot-ass girlfriend with him. And it was just, it was incredible. So he never really reached his full athletic potential because he was living the good life very early on. But then he marries this girl, which, big mistake, right? Married her, like, 2 months out of high school. What the hell are you doing? They couldn't be happier. They are still together today.
They're still married today.
They've created these genetic freak show, like, incredibly athletic, good-looking kids, you know, that are all... So he's 45 years old and pretty much done. Like, all his kids are in college. His one son is dominating. So, like, his son, who's just as athletic as he was, but even better looking because his wife is hot too, is just, I got to imagine the kid's going to make it in life. I don't know. But I haven't actually watched him on film yet.
Well, that's interesting because you answered my question before I asked it, which was, did this 22-year-old know that she was dating a high school kid? You know, or was he lying to her?
Right.
And I was going to preface the question by saying, I don't know what the statute of limitations is on 22-year-olds dating 17-year-olds. I don't want to, you know, if he still knows this person, I don't want her to get arrested or anything like that. Oh, as it turns out, they're married happily with beautiful kids.
She was either 21 or 20. Well, yeah, so because to add to it, of course, she'd buy us beer, right? It's like, how awesome is that? Like, we're all out trying to bribe a homeless guy to buy us a 12-pack at the convenience store. I won't say his name. My buddy is just having his girlfriend pick up a sixer for him on the way to baseball practice.
I'm picturing high school Seth. So, do you have any friends? Using some of that smooth high school pain game right there. Did she have any friends?
I can't use his name because he's an upstanding businessman these days.
Yeah. No, of course.
And I don't want his son to get, you know, knocked off or, you know, like lose a check mark on the character department because his dad was a stud in high school.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So speaking of the character department, we got a little more information, a little more news on the Will Fuller situation. Will Fuller specifically, but obviously it's Fuller and Bradley Roby who are going to be suspended, who are suspended for the rest of the 2020 season. One of the big questions I had, Seth, and one of the questions that if Romeo Crennel's press conference was going to take place at 9 o'clock today, it's now going to take place at 10:30 today. Very anxious for that press conference. Even more anxious for J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson this afternoon, especially JJ, to get his thoughts on Roby and Fuller getting suspended, considering JJ went off on Ross Blacklock getting kicked out of a game like he just committed the ultimate football sin. I'm anxious to hear what JJ has to say about two of his really good at football teammates getting suspended the rest of the year. One of the questions I would have jumped out of our show to ask Romeo Crennel, though, and we've got an answer on it now, was what did you guys know? When did you guys find out about Will Fuller? Because the team has done some things recently where you go, boy, if they knew about this Will Fuller suspension coming down, this would be odd behavior. Floating Will Fuller for, you know, digging in on a second round pick for Will Fuller, trying to float him in trade talks with the Packers. I would say more recently, cutting Kenny Stills. Wow, if you knew about Will Fuller, that doesn't make a lot of sense to cut Kenny Stills. As it turns out, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, reporting that a Texan spokesperson told PFT that the team learned about Fuller's suspension on Monday from Fuller's agent. So learning about the same time the rest of us did. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, it means they didn't know when they were negotiating with the Packers. It means they didn't know when they cut Kenny Stills.
Yeah, and this is pretty much how I assumed it went. And I think this is generally what I was saying yesterday. I was trying to be careful because I didn't have all the information, but just the way the timeline's all worked up, Florio jumped to the same conclusion I did, which was, it doesn't seem like there was an appeal here, probably because the timing of it. So with both Roby and Fuller, you look at it, you say, all right, based on previous circumstances, I'm not going to get out of this one. So I'm not going to appeal it because if I just start the suspension now, then I'll miss one game at the beginning of next year. For Fuller, it won't hurt his free agency as much. Roby, this is a lost season for the most part, other than the Texans' 1.5% chance of making the playoffs,
Sean. It's 98.5% lost, yes.
But that's not 100%.
Not 100%. No, you're right. No, this Seth, this remains the show of optimism. I'm not going to let Fuller and Roby hike their leg all over our optimism at all.
So now that we have presumably maybe like a 0.9% chance of making the playoffs. Probably. So, but it is, for both those guys, it makes a lot of sense just to say, all right, I'm just going to accept my punishment, move on,
no doubt.
Play a full season, close to a full season next year.
Yep.
Still 16 games, so you can pretend it's a full season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're going to be suspended one game out of a 17-game season.
Are they going to, is it 17 next year when they're starting that up? I think it is. Let's pretend that it is. All right, we're off and running on a Wednesday. John McClain's going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. We got a lot of stuff to get to today. Let's stick with the Texans here. Two Texans employees who, on the surface, it doesn't look like they're going to benefit from losing Fuller and Roby. I think they might benefit greatly from losing Fuller and Roby. We'll tell you who they are and why next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with you. Appreciate you tuning in. So this will be the first week coming up this week with no Will Fuller, no Bradley Roby for the Texans, suspended for the rest of the year for PEDs. They play the Indianapolis Colts. Not the ideal opponent to be breaking in an offense without your best offensive weapon, not named Deshaun Watson, and without your best player in the secondary. But it is what it is. So the two coordinators, Tim Kelly, OC, Anthony Weaver, DC, on the surface, Seth, you go, boy, that sucks for these guys that they're losing these two players. But I think the Texans' entire coaching staff, up to and including Romeo Crennel, if Romeo Crennel wants to continue to coach or work in the NFL, they're all auditioning right now, and they're either auditioning for a new head coach here or they're auditioning for the league. And whereas on the surface, if it were a season that were not a 98.5% loss season, you would say, well, this stinks because they're really trying to win games, and that sucks for Weaver and Tim Kelly. I actually think this Fuller and Roby thing is actually good for them, in that I don't know that there's any expectations for either of these guys at this point this year. Like, I think most of the stuff that this team is suffering from, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is getting blamed on Bill O'Brien. And I think if you're doing something that's amping up the degree of difficulty, these guys are playing with house money. Like, if Anthony Weaver can continue to improve the defense, and the defense has gotten incrementally better, it's still not good, but if he can do it without his best guy in the secondary over the last five games, if they actually continue to improve, you know, a little bit each week, that kind of thing, Tim Kelly, if he can actually continue to put together games where they're scoring 28, 30, 35 points with no Will Fuller, that would be remarkable, because that's something that this team hasn't done since Will Fuller got here. He's been the guy that's taken that offense from, you know, an average to below average level to a good level. Never great, but good. So I think this is actually, whereas intuitively you think, well, this sucks for both of these guys to lose one of their best players, I actually think for what the goals of both of these guys are right now, deep down, I know they're going to say their goal is to win football games, but deep down, their personal goals are probably to get themselves looking as good as possible for other coaches around the league. I think this is a good thing for both of these guys.
When you brought that up, I thought first of this might not be a good thing for me to bring a good name, but well, what the hell? Lane Kiffin. When Lane Kiffin first took the job with the Raiders, that was my first thought, because I knew Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin was a quality control guy for the Jacksonville Jaguars when I was there.
Oh, really?
And and he was just this young kid who's super cocky and arrogant, like just would talk smack about
still is.
You know, this guy's not that good. I remember sitting in an office with him, and he'd be like, you know, I won't even say the name of the player. It was a good player on our team on defense. And he said, you know, like, I don't know. I hear all this talk about how good he is and everything. I'm not that impressed. I'm like, he's saying that to me, one of his teammates. And he's just this I barely at the time, you know, I wasn't all that smart about the NFL coming into it. I didn't really know that his father was a legend, you know, Monty Kiffin, the defensive coordinator for the Bucks. So Lane Kiffin was just this cocky little kid. And then, like, what, 5 years later, all of a sudden, he's being named head coach of the Oakland Raiders. And really the thought, I think, around the league was, well, there's nothing to lose here, because if he fails, then, Al Davis is off his rocker. He's too young for the job. And there's no harm in taking this job, because you can only go up. Either you do well and people are really impressed, or you fail and people say, well, the cards were stacked against you anyway. So I think Weaver and Kelly are both in that situation right now, that anything, they'll get a little bit of a pass or a mulligan on this season because of, I think, real reasons and also just reasons of perception. People look at the Texans like it's kind of a mess right now.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to bar them or prevent them from getting a job down the road. And also, I think especially for Tim Kelly, I don't think Tim Kelly was really being talked about in any circles as a hot candidate to be hired away as an offensive coordinator. You know, but now people will think of him as a bit of a candidate. Or maybe somebody will hire him as a passing game coordinator or a quarterback's coach or something like that. So he'll take a step back, but with an eye towards stepping forward again. Weaver, I think, could very well end up being like a Mike Vrabel, where it almost doesn't matter whether he's successful as a coordinator or not. Just like with Mike Tomlin. Tomlin had 1 year, didn't really blow the doors off as a defensive coordinator, but was so impressive in his interview with the Steelers that he got the job. I think Weaver's going to be that guy. It might benefit Weaver best of all if he doesn't get another coordinator job. Like, I think he'll get a chance at being a head coach without having to prove himself as a coordinator.
Wow,
if he goes as a defensive line coach somewhere, like, let's say he gets an interview this year as a head coach and gets it, fine. But if he doesn't, maybe just go take a job as a defensive line coach somewhere next year and still position yourself to get that head coaching job.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree. I think Kelly, I think, has more to gain and has more that he needs to gain than Weaver. I think the league largely looks favorably at Anthony Weaver and looks at the talent that William O'Brien, the general manager, left him this year. They get what's going on here.
Yeah, and Kelly has done a few things. I mean, to a certain degree, even though he will never admit to it publicly, you know, at various times these last few weeks, he has abandoned the run for spells. And, like, I agree with him. You should never abandon it completely, because the defense has to know. If the defense knows that you're not going to run at all and you don't have Tom Brady at quarterback, it gets a lot tougher. So even if you're not doing it effectively, you got to at least show that you're committed to sometimes running the ball. But Kelly has, at times here, kind of wholesale abandoned the run in stretches. So I applaud him for that. I admire him for that.
He is way less stubborn.
Admire is a little too strong, but I applaud him for
that. No, no, but
because his mentor would not allow it.
No, he's way less stubborn than Bill O'Brien. And I think I think most human beings on earth are less stubborn than Bill O'Brien. But Tim Kelly, noticeably less stubborn than his mentor, Bill O'Brien. How big a deficit has Deshaun Watson been operating at compared to his quarterback peers? We're going to do a deep dive on this next. All right, let's take a little step back in time. Here is Deshaun Watson back in early September. Boy, have times changed. This was Deshaun Watson at his press conference when the Texans gave him his new contract, his $40 million per year, top of market, not named Patrick Mahomes contract. Here was Deshaun Watson on that day.
That was my last and least concern. You know, honestly, the money is amazing. It's life changing. It's great. But the biggest thing is for the McNair family, OB, Jack, to just trust in me and believe in me that, you know, I'm their guy. I'm their quarterback is the biggest thing that really touches me. You know, growing up from where I'm from, there's not too many people to make it out. And so for them to just trust me, I mean, it means the most. So that's the biggest thing.
All right, so that's Deshaun Watson. Very emotional on that day, obviously feeling a great attachment to, and understandably so, to the Texans organization. He mentions O'Brien and Easterby there. O'Brien now gone, obviously. Seth, boy, as I was watching some of that press conference yesterday to, you know, try to, you know, give some substance to what it is we're about to talk about here with Deshaun Watson. And as I'm watching it, I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine if they hadn't signed Deshaun Watson to an extension and the season was unfolding the way it was right now? Boy, like, in some ways, like, how much power Deshaun might have. Like, Deshaun might be handpicking the coach himself.
Deshaun, it would be the amount of speculation about potential trades and whatnot would just be, I mean, look at what happens when the Warriors place a simple call about James Harden. It's a big deal, right? And that's in the NBA. If it goes into, like, all these different fan bases thinking about what potentially getting Deshaun Watson, you know, or which GM is going to come in and have to try to fix this or get Deshaun Watson around. Yeah, that would have been pretty damn intriguing. It's nice as a Texans fan. Like, as a sports radio guy, I kind of wish that had happened. As a Texans fan, I'm glad that it's not.
Yes.
I'm glad that I get to just say, okay, Deshaun's cool. He's on a contract. He's on a contract of a reasonable length. He's here for the foreseeable future. And now all they have to do is get it right with a GM and a head coach. No big deal, right? That's
yeah.
all. That's
NBD. Yeah. NBD yeah. is the kids text me.
Just don't screw this up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like that was one of the things. You know, Bill O'Brien, most of what he did as a general manager was inexcusable. It was malpractice. There were a few good things that he did, and one of them was making sure Deshaun Watson's deal was done. Because you're right. It would have been amazing content to talk about the potential. Boy, if you're the Jets or the Jags, does it make more sense to trade the first or second pick in the draft and other picks to the Texans for Watson? Or does it make sense to just go ahead and take Trevor Lawrence? In the sales pitch, they're already going to have to, I think, do some sort of modified sales pitch, the new GM and the head coach, to J.J. Watt. If indeed they want to keep J.J. Watt here and maybe sign him to a new deal, move some money around to do some things in free agency, my guess is the possession arrow for J.J. is pointed to being somewhere else until he knows who the GM and the head coach are. Can you imagine if they had to do a similar sales pitch to Deshaun Watson at this point?
Right.
And if Deshaun Watson is entering a relationship with a GM and a head coach that's on the franchise tag, you know, which is never a recipe for a solid relationship, you know?
And it's hard to say. I mean, what would they have offered him? What could they have done differently? I think it would have just been all held in flux, right? Until you actually got that general manager in place. I still think just the economics of the situation being what they are, and because you have the franchise tag in your back pocket, kind of like the Cowboys with Dak Prescott, there's always time, you know, and maybe Deshaun would have gotten disgruntled for a while. It might have been unpleasant, but yeah, they would have hired him, you know, and maybe they would have been for the worse. Who knows? Maybe then Deshaun has a little too much influence over which general manager, which head coach, because you really can't screw that up. But I think what you have now with Deshaun under contract and locked in is a certain amount of room to breathe. And I'm thinking of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, where, you know, what if Deshaun had said, all right, look, I'm going to kick the can down the road and wait and see on this, and let's see how everything works out. So in Green Bay, Matt LaFleur came in, and yes, the Packers had a good record last year, but it wasn't like the offense really looked all that great, and it didn't look like Aaron Rodgers was all of a sudden going to revert back to classic Aaron Rodgers. If Deshaun were in that same situation and he didn't have a contract, like after, am I making this too complex? Like if you look at Rodgers after his first year with a new head coach, he might not have been all that enthused about it,
right?
But he was already locked into his contract.
Yes.
Deshaun wouldn't be locked into that contract and might not be all that enthused about it. So this next year, you might get the right coordinator, the right head coach, the right GM, all that. It might not be gangbusters right out of the gate. The same way it wasn't for Matt Ryan in Atlanta with his first year with Kyle Shanahan.
Yep.
The same way it was for Aaron Rodgers. So now we've got a little room to breathe. And like, if there's some growing pains as you're trying to get on the same page, that's going to be okay. It's not going to be like, oh, crap, Deshaun's got to try to force his way out of here.
Do you think the fan base understands that? Do you think the fan base understands that there's a good chance that next year there's not going to be an immediate – this is just my opinion. I don't think there's going to be an immediate turnaround with a new head coach and a general manager to where they're 11-5 again with this team. I just think, and I know that it's easier to do than it looks like on the surface to fix the cap and to work around not having a first or second round pick. Now, you've got a very small margin for error. You got to get a lot of things right if it's going to turn around quickly. This team's probably going to finish 6-10, 7-9, something like that. I think it's probably an 8-8 or 9-7 year next year, unless they're really able to get out from underneath some things. Do you think that just not having Bill O'Brien, just having a head coach who's and a general manager not named Bill or William O'Brien, is satisfying enough to the fan base to where people understand next year's kind of a redshirt year for everybody?
Well, I think the offense is going to improve a good chunk immediately, unless they bring in somebody who's, I mean, honestly, whenever you bring in a Kubiak-style system, which would be really good for this team and for Deshaun Watson, I think, there's an adjustment period.
Yes.
The thing with the Texans is, that adjustment period can't possibly look any worse in the running game. So I, you know, it like it takes a while to teach the zone running system. It's not simply a matter of calling inside zone and outside zone. There's technique that the offensive line needs to understand. There's the running backs being the right guys and being on board with everything. So it takes a little while, but the Texans are the worst rushing offense in the league, I believe still, right? Or at least down near the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get any worse, and I think it would improve better. But it's year two where it really starts to kick in. And I think Deshaun would really latch on to a lot of the play-action elements of a Kubiak-style system, and you'd see an immediate improvement.
Yeah.
Maybe his advanced stat numbers wouldn't look as good in the passing game right away, but I think the overall offense would be better.
Yeah, I think Deshaun's a quick study, too, and I think that helps.
Yeah.
Deshaun's really smart, and I think he'll pick up the nuances of it pretty quickly. And you're right, it can't look any worse. So, Seth, here are the top four names on the board for NFL MVP this year. And I think I'm going to go through these names, and I think these are names that, talent-wise, and certainly coming into the season when they're stack-ranking quarterbacks, you know, Mike Sando does those tiers of quarterbacks. There's other writers, talent evaluators that evaluate quarterbacks. I think it's safe to say that Deshaun was viewed as a top five or six quarterback coming into this season by most of those subjective rankings that are out there. I think most of them had Deshaun up in the tier with these names. Patrick Mahomes is the runaway favorite right now to win his second MVP award, minus 350. That means you wager, it means you risk 350 to just win $100. He's that big a favorite, 1 to 1 to 3.5. Aaron Rodgers is next, plus 375, so about 4 to 1. Russell Wilson is next at about 6.5 to 1, and then there's a big drop-off after those three. Ben Roethlisberger, 25 to 1. Those are the four names at the top of the board. The other quarterbacks that are even on the board right now, Josh Allen, 33 to 1, Kyler Murray, 33 to 1, Tom Brady, 66 to 1. But I think if you'd come into the season and you'd said, look, these names are going to be on the MVP odds board near the top, Mahomes, Rodgers, Wilson, Roethlisberger, and when the Texans record was 0-0, you would have said, does Deshaun Watson belong aside these names? And I think most people would have said, yeah, absolutely. And I think he still does, talent-wise. He's having a gangbusters season. Statistically, aesthetically, growth-wise, he's protecting the football. He doesn't have a run game, and he's attacking downfield. Deshaun's been great. The record stinks, but Deshaun's been great. And so if I'm Deshaun, and Seth, I'm listening to that cut where he's sobbing over the Texans investing in him and trusting in him. There's a clear affinity with Deshaun and the organization, with the ownership, and with upper management, at least in that press conference, certainly there is, and I think there still is, even behind the scenes, especially with O'Brien gone now. That if I'm Deshaun or if I'm a fan of Deshaun and I'm looking at those four quarterbacks, Mahomes, Rodgers, Wilson, Roethlisberger, and I'm thinking, man, think of the resources those four guys have. You know what I mean? Like think of what those four guys have now in their head coach and offensive coordinator. You know, Deshaun is looking for a new head coach and offensive coordinator. You know, Mahomes has Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy. Aaron Rodgers they got rid of Mike McCarthy and they brought in Matt LaFleur, and it's worked really, really well with LaFleur. Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll are like, you know, they're probably the duo that's one notch below Brady and Belichick over the last decade as a head coach and a quarterback who you associate with one another. And Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin are not far behind. Ironically, two quarterbacks that have defensive head coaches in Carroll and Mike Tomlin. And so if I'm Deshaun, I'm going, I'm as good as all these guys. This organization has to get this right, man. Look at what these other guys are getting.
You know, there's a part of me, especially when you bring up Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger, that almost makes me want a defensive-minded coach more. Because if you look at those two guys, for one, Russell Wilson, I think Pete Carroll could have done a better job of finding the right coordinators for Russell Wilson. I think nobody in Seattle was ever a huge fan of Bevel, you know. But with Roethlisberger, the way Tomlin has approached it, it's almost the way like a musical, a singer will work with different producers, where a singer might work with a producer for a couple albums and then want to change their sound or whatever, so they move on to another producer. They've done that with Ben Roethlisberger, and at various times in his career, they've thought, okay, you know what? He's had enough of Bruce Arians. It's time to move on. Okay, you know what? Todd Haley was a fun experiment, but now it's time to move on again. And I think it's worked out really well. Roethlisberger has kind of evolved as he's gotten older. You look at him right now. He's got 24 touchdowns, 5 interceptions.
Yeah.
Incredible touchdown to interception ratio, but he's doing it in such a different way. Like the complete opposite fashion of the way he did it with Bruce Arians.
Yep.
And so Tomlin has, by he's throwing shorter, he's being very safe, you know, like not pushing it deep all the time because he can't. But still, so I think Tomlin's done a really good job of saying, all right, well, what does my quarterback need now? How are we going to operate with it? And for a lot of people who say, well, the problem with the defensive coordinator is you always end up with these offensive coordinators who end up getting other jobs as head coaches. If they're good, they're going to get plucked. That's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, that's not necessarily, change is good. And because of the fact that offensive coordinators are always getting plucked to be head coaches, there's never a shortage of guys who just got fired as a head coach who could come in and be your coordinator,
yeah.
You know, and help your quarterback grow. So Robert Saleh, who's the defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, is really starting to be my favorite candidate,
yep.
Almost specifically because he's a defensive-minded coach.
Yes.
Well, for a lot of other reasons, but like the whole, no, you need an offensive guy, that carries zero water for me right now.
Yeah, well, I think, for one, I know that that's, a lot of folks feel like, out of an offensive guy, and Deshaun, and in some respects, I've been that guy because I say, look, every decision that you make needs to be in the best interest of Deshaun Watson. Well, I think what's in the best interest of Deshaun Watson is making sure that this football team starts winning football games more than anything else. And I think a couple things, Seth, when you bring that up, the hiring a defensive coach, I think one, regardless of who the head coach is, you're going to have to trust that he's going to be good at evaluating potential assistant coaches and coordinators, regardless of what side of the ball that he's on. You bring in an offensive head coach, and he may have the greatest system in the world, but if he's not good at hiring, then it's all going to fall apart anyways. So if you hire a guy, you're hiring him with the hope that he's good at hiring, and part of that would be hiring and bringing in a good offensive coordinator. That's number one. Number two, I think one of the assets that you have as a team is Deshaun's football acumen and Deshaun's ability to adapt. Look, Deshaun has put up numbers in the worst concocted offense for him possible. Whatever it is Bill O'Brien was trotting out there. So anything is going to be better. And I think if one of your assets is Deshaun's acumen, Deshaun's ability to adapt to any sort of good system, we'll couch it as a good system, then it allows you to address what your bigger need is. And I think the bigger need is this team just needs better leadership as a head coach. They need a leader who comes in and talks about being 14-2 and getting to Super Bowls, not a coach who walks up to the podium at every press conference and tries to sell you on it's an 8-8 league and you're trying to win every game 31-28. Not a coach who walks up and immediately deflates every rookie on the roster by telling the media that they're a bunch of dullards who don't know anything and they're not going to contribute this year. Bill O'Brien did too many things where he walked up to a podium and talked it into existence that were bad. I want a head coach who's going to get up there and talk things into existence that are elite, that are things that can get, that can rally a fan base. And I think that's what this, the organization, the team itself, the city, I think is more in need of that sort of leadership. Obviously, somebody who's a good tactician as well and who's demonstrated that with other, you know, with the teams they've worked for. But I think they need that more than some sort of intricate system that they are the very specific professor of.
Yeah.
And I feel, I'm with you. I feel like Saleh is a guy that's like that. And if Deshaun's acumen is an asset that you can leverage to be able to bring in a guy who's a defensive guy who already has a philosophy that we've heard about in camps and coaching clinics where he's already espoused what his hiring philosophy is, which I loved, then I'm with you. I'm less and less beholden to the head coach needing to be part of some, you know, part of one side of the ball or the other.
And I would say, because we always seem to end up back talking about Belichick, because that's just the way things have been in the NFL for the last two decades.
Right.
I think when you get too married to saying, like, well, you need to have a guy that's this way or that way, you always have to remember in the NFL that there's multiple different ways to do it. So if we go back, you know, an era or two, I would look at, say, like, the difference between a Bill Walsh or a Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson was not a particularly bright X's and O's guy. I'm not saying he's dumb or anything, but Troy Aikman himself will tell you it's not like Jimmy Johnson was as smart as Norv Turner when it comes to the X's and O's.
No doubt.
But what Jimmy Johnson was really, really good at was understanding his team, motivating them, perhaps in a way that wouldn't work in this era, but for that era, he knew exactly how to motivate those guys and how to get the best out of all of his guys. He was a culture guy. You know, he created a certain environment in which guys could thrive. It helped that he had some of the most talented football players who ever lived. But he also just, he created this cauldron where everything worked. Whereas with Bill Walsh was a culture guy too. But he was also an offensive genius, you know, with a revolutionary offense that the league had never seen before. Two different ways of doing it, two different personality types. But if you're going to, whichever personality type you choose, be sure they're the best at it. So the mistake that a lot of people will make is saying, oh, well, because this guy's a really smart X's and O's guy, he's going to be a good head coach. Like, no, it doesn't work that way because Bill Walsh had something extra to him. You know, so likewise, if you're going to hire a guy who's a culture guy, who's going to set a mood and a culture, he better be really, really good at it. You can't just say, well, he's a culture guy, but then he comes in and the guy slaps up some posters and thinks that's it. That's why with Robert Saleh, it's just so over the top impressive. And the reports from so many people, players and coaches alike, are so good that you get it. And if he's going to be that kind of a guy, then hell yeah. And by the way, he's also a really, really good defensive coordinator.
He also needs to be good at evaluating talent. And when you bring up Jimmy Johnson, Seth, and the Colts, I think it's a great example of what we're talking about in this segment as a guy who's really more of a tour de force than he is an X's and O's guy. But the other thing Jimmy Johnson could do, I know you said he had a lot of good players on that team, and he did. When he got there, they were 1-15. Jimmy Johnson handpicked a lot of those guys. And they weren't all first overall picks in the draft like Troy Aikman. They did that Herschel Walker deal, and then they had a plethora of picks, and they cashed in on them, man. They drafted a lot of guys that other teams could have very easily drafted in any sort of middle round, and he turned them into Pro Bowlers and Hall of Famers. So whoever it is, and that's with Saleh, Seth, that's one of the things I would want to know is, tell me about a guy on that defense that you had specific input into bringing onto that defense. I would want to learn evaluation stories that Robert Saleh was specifically involved in.
Yeah, because it is true, as much as, look, Saleh's going to have a GM who's calling the shots with personnel, but a GM is only as good as his communication with his head coach. You know, we were joking yesterday about how one of O'Brien's issues with as a GM was that he didn't communicate well with his head coach, who happened to be himself. Like, he went out, Bill O'Brien, the GM, kept going out and getting these pass-catching running backs, but then Bill O'Brien, the head coach, was not using them as pass-catching running backs.
It's the weirdest thing.
Bill O'Brien had a bad GM-coach relationship with himself. So if that's hard to do, imagine how hard it is for two separate human beings to do it. That's the important thing, is that Robert Saleh has to be a good enough evaluator and be on the same page with his GM to communicate exactly what he wants, you know. And I saw that with Casserly and Capers. There was some disconnect with those two, because I think they were both very bright. I think they were both awesome guys, like two of the best people I ever met in football. But I think there's, for whatever reason, there was a little bit of a disconnect into what types of players Dom thought he wanted and what types of players Casserly thought that Dom Capers thought he wanted, to where we got some of these guys like Jason Babin, we traded up for Jason Babin, and it turns out that Jason Babin ideally should have been a 4-3 defensive end. He was awesome when he went to those schemes.
Yes.
He was horrendous as a 3-4 outside linebacker, you know.
As we learned. All right, we are off and running on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us in about an hour on the show. A lot to get into with McClain today, for sure. Download the radio.com app. Use that rewind feature. We love that. We love getting texts from people both here in Houston and all over the country and the world that are listening in. Houstonians around the country listening on the radio.com app. Great app. And you can tune in and rewind all the shows here on Sports Radio 610. 713-572-4610 if you want to chime in on the show as we head into the 7 o'clock hour. How do Houston fans feel after the Roby and Fuller suspensions? I did a Pender poll on Twitter yesterday. I'll tell you how they feel next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
right, football fans. The NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.